spite of all the Zach Brown contracts, all the horrors that Scott Dixon could conjure, it is now and forever Pullover.
Pullover!
Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
Welcome to episode 470 of Motorsport 101. I am your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. And in the words of esteemed poet laureate, Gordon Ramsay, finally, some good fucking food after that MotoGP taping we just had to sit through.
Oh my God, something positive to talk about.
Yeah, God. Welcome to the coronation in Portland of one Alex Palou, the penultimate round of the IndyCar season championship for 2023 happened, and well, Alex Palou went full Babe Ruth. He said to Chip Ganassi before this race started, "We're winning this championship right here, right now. I'm going to do it with a win."
He called his shot.
He called his shot and he did it. He dominated the Grand Prix of Portland.
Wait. How many laps you lead?
69.
Nice. Yeah.
Thank you and good night, everybody. I've been Dre Harrison. Thank you very much for listening.
Yeah, that's the podcast. See everyone next week.
Yep, see ya.
Whoa, no. Hold on.
We need to expand on this a bit further.
Yes, we do. As you can probably tell by now, joining me as ever for the third episode of this recording, and we're all a little bit strung out, it's Cam Buckley and RJ O'Connell. Say hi, gentlemen.
Hey, everyone.
Howdy. We told y'all. We told you it was going to be special.
We told you. Look,
we did not tell you directly. We probably didn't tell you directly, the listener, but we try to tell a lot of people. We're just like, you know what this Alex Palou guy is. He's coming in. He's driving for coin. He's got a Japanese co-sponsor. Is he really? Oh, yes, he is.
Oh, he's actually better than that, because then you gave him Chip Ganassi equipment, and he has made it everyone's problem ever since, especially Zach Brown.
I think I've said it a couple of years ago, and I will admit this, I think the intro is the most appropriate place for it. I distinctively remember the fuss from my two colleagues in this room right now over Alex Palou when he joined Dale Coyne over from Super Formula, and I never understood what the fuss was about this kid. Even when he was at Dale Coyne, they had a very good rookie season at Dale Coyne. I was like, yeah, well, Dale Coyne's raised a bunch of youngsters and rookies into decent seasons like Ed Jones. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be anything special.
And then they plugged him into the 10.
And then they put him in the 10, and then it all went to shit. I was like, okay, it's like that. Okay, that boy nice. Okay, fine.
That boy very nice.
Shit. Okay.
I can qualify this with but a mere summary of this season. He just curb stomped Scott Dixon in equal machinery.
Again.
It doesn't happen that way.
He's done it twice in 3 years, Cameron.
It shouldn't be possible. And Scott Dixon spent the last month reminding us of who he is. Because he is still him on his day.
And he was excellent again this weekend. Should have really finished at least in second place. He was screwed by another, what I like to call, IndyCar competition caution.
Yeah, the worst thing we could talk about on this episode compared to a MotoGP caution is IndyCar's subjective yellows. A pejorative subjective in the series yellows that only IndyCar race director Kyle Novak likes. Because I don't know of anybody else that likes this.
I still remember the on the radio after they were bunching the field back up again. Scott Dixon went ape shit in regards to.
We were running out of beeps.
Yeah, like the bleep machine was working overtime. I had to get a new hamster in the wheel. It's like that scene in SpongeBob where he goes, "So it took so long that they had to hire a new voice artist to do the voiceover because."
Mr. Krabs, you want to know what I think? Mrs. Puff pulling out the dictionary.
Yeah, it was one of those moments. He was apocalyptically angry at the fact that Rosenquist had jumped him because, again, IndyCar had given him the luxury of being able to choose whether to go in the pits or not before the caution dropped for Augustin Canapino's, at the time, beached car. More on that in a little bit as well, but we will talk a little bit about Polo. We will celebrate his reign of terror slash dominance on the IndyCar series. I wonder if they'll call for a technical directive to stop Alex Polo from dominating again for next year. Who knows?
I'll pipe down, Lewis.
We'll have to wait and see on that one. We're going to talk a little bit about IndyCar's most popular man. Well, second, Romain Grosjean. As it turns out, he really will be leaving Andretti at the end of the season. He might be done in IndyCar in general. We'll have to wait and see.
Maybe.
But certainly his time in the yellow or multicolored number 28 entry is also Pullover. Or Grover, I should say, really, because I think that sounds catchier.
It's Grosjeover.
And we're going to talk about a little something we don't normally talk about on this show, and I think it's very fascinating to bring it up. The leader circle and how that's played into what I like to call IndyCar's relegation race. It's a fascinating point of topic to talk about, and it's something that I feel like it's very fun. So we'll talk a little bit about that later. Also, I love the fact that in our chat, Steve, who's listening in, hi, Steve, goes, why would Freddie Spencer do this? Which, not today, Steve.
Eddie, yeah.
And once he gets a reprieve, it was everything else wrong with MotoGP.
We're gonna talk about a relegation battle that has nothing to do with Everton.
Indeed.
Here's where you can find us. Motorsport101.com.
Indeed, you can find us on there. We've got reviews of all the weekend's action from yours truly on there if you want some extra opinions. If you want to back us on Patreon, you can at patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our episodes. You can upgrade to 10 to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, like Steve and Jason are right now. Thank you very much for joining, fellas. They've been here for, I want to say, something like 3 hours already.
You guys are sick.
It's about 7:25 Eastern time right now. We started just after 4:30.
Yeah, sick.
Thank goodness we're not recording this tomorrow because, like, hey, NFL's back. Hey, this is the reason why IndyCar ends in early September.
No kidding. Thank goodness for that. So all of that, thanks again to those guys, the sickos that are still listening in as we speak. Shout out to them as ever. Social media, Dre underscore WTFI on Twitter. I got the wrong employer. CBuckley917 at RJ O'Connell. Motorsport_101 for the Twitter account for us. Motorsport101 pod for the podcast itself. If you want to follow us on Instagram for all that good stuff as well, all of our social media on our website, of course, Motorsport 101 as well. So let's celebrate with some chicken and let's talk about Alex Polo winning the Grand Prix of Portland coming up right after this.
This is where I would do the famous Norm Macdonald bit of not eating a single morsel of food until Alex Polo wins the championship. You tell me he won it with a rounded hand. And then I would just stuff my face in a bucket full of original recipe Kentucky Fried Chicken. Hey, by the way, did you know that for the first time since the reunification of North American open wheel racing, we had somebody win the national title with a race in hand? He's done it. Alex Polo dominated the Portland Grand Prix, leading a very nice 69 laps on route to his fifth win of the season and the first early title win in IndyCar since unification. You have to go back to Sebastian Bourdais in 2007 in the Champ Car World Series to find the last driver who won it before the final round. Bourdais also did it in 06 and 05. And oh, by the way, in 05, on the other side of the split in the IndyCar series, a gentleman by the name of Dan Weldon did the double and won the championship with a round in hand. Polo won over Felix Rosenqvist, who made a late final stop before a caution and got himself a season best second place finish. And on top of that, got himself some job security on top of that, not McLaren, and Scott Dixon valiantly finishing third as the last man who could have stood in Polo's way on the road to the championship. So, Dre, what'd you make of Polo's drive and him clinching his second Astor Cup?
Shout out to Scott Dixon before I really get into this, because Dixon was the only man in Polo's postcode all day long, essentially.
He tried.
He tried. He gave it everything he had. He dumped his entire push to pass by two-thirds distance. He tried to get back ahead on track position. He failed on that front too. And that's only for one reason, and that reason is because Alex Palou is that fucking good.
Dumped his push to pass, trying to undercut him, and Palou came out with a bigger gap up front.
Yeah, Alex Palou is him. Like it reminded me a lot of the Indianapolis win, the first one he had there that started the hottest run of his incredible season, where he won 4 out of 5 after the month of May started, where Palou on the primary tire is just otherworldly fast. Like no one
in the field
could touch him. Like, you gotta remember, right? Because let's not forget, this race started with Graham Rahal on pole, and he was fantastic in qualifying again.
This was gonna be the day that Graham Rahal finally ends the 6-year streak. And it looked like that in the first stint, and then once pit stops cycled out, no, it was not. Nope.
Like, he passed Scott McLaughlin dominated this race last year. McLaughlin was pushed aside and was passed off camera. I know he was on the alternate to start off the race, and the alternate was not an ideal race tire at all. But Palou on scuffed primaries.
He was faster than fresh alternate runners at the starts of their stint. On that final stint, after the caution, Rosenqvist was behind him on brand new alternates, and Palou gapped him immediately.
Palou did not use a single set of sticker primary or Firestone Hollywood tires during the entire race. In a race that was supposed to be on the red, aka the Firestone Wolfpack tires.
Too sweet. No. Yeah, I mean, it just
called his shot.
He knew. He fucking knew how fast he was, and he was in complete. He dictated the entire terms of engagement of this race, and Dixon was the only man who could even stay reasonably close to him. His used primary pace was absolutely untouchable. His start was perfect. His primary tire form was perfect. Scott Dixon threw an unusually unlike Scott Dixon level of aggression strategically at him to try and beat him, and Dixon failed.
You want a microcosm of everything great about Alex Palou? This race had everything.
Felix Rosenqvist had the sticker reds to end the race and failed.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. Like, people were saying this was going to be an alternate race. This ended up with the conditions being a primary race. It turned very quickly. Like, the alternate tires would not last very long. And to his credit, Alex Palou made the one set of alternates that he used. He didn't have the kind of dramatic fall off that other drivers did.
Yeah, even when he was on the suboptimal tire, he was still better than everyone else.
I've joked that he's the dark magician of IndyCar for the sorcery that he pulls off. He's upgraded. He's the full dark paladin. He's merged with Buster Blader. He is completely untouchable.
He's death when death shows up in Gauntlet Dark Legacy, and there's nothing you could do. You just run.
Yeah, that's Gauntlet Dark Legacy deep cut. I don't know how many of our listeners remember that shit.
None of them on the PS2, because all of their PS2s lost the ability to read CDs after a week.
It was a coronation. It was Ronnie O'Sullivan in the middle of a championship winning century clearance. It was he danced on this field, and I cannot tell you how good this IndyCar field is. Scott Dixon, the last 5-6 rounds of the year. Like, in fact, no, I stand corrected.
I love what Jason put in the chat. He's Darth Vader when you realize he doesn't have a health bar.
I was like, oh. No. You're not fighting him. You're running for your life. I need to point this out here. Scott Dixon, his average finish this season has been 5.6.
In any other IndyCar year, that is at minimum contending, probably a championship.
Been tanked. That 5.8 has been tanked by an incident early in the season at Long Beach where he was stuffed in the tires by Pat O'Ward. That was not his fault. Otherwise,
it was helped heavily in the last month by two wins on the bounce.
Yeah.
Two wins on the bounce. He's at 525 points. We've stayed at about 17 rounds in IndyCar for a little while now.
Yeah.
I've said general rule of thumb, 550 puts you in title contention. That's a very good year. 550 is roughly championship level. Dick Pelot is at 618.
I say, Andre, drop me that track. 618.
618. Booyaka. Jason puts in the chat, hadn't Will Power had something around 5 last year? You'd be correct, Jason. His average finish last season, the year we nicknamed Zen Master Will Power, was 5.8. Alex Pelot's average finish this year has been 3.8.
Something that has not been done, again, since the unification of a sport, to have a champion with an average finish below 4.
Let me read off this. This came out during the weekend, and I thought this was just astonishing. Across the first 63 starts of someone's IndyCar career, in terms of overall statistics, wins, top fives, and top tens, it goes as follows. Mario Andretti.
Mm-hmm.
AJ Foyt.
Yep.
Alex Pelot.
He's only the 6th man in history to win 2 titles before his 27th birthday.
In the first 63 career starts, he's the 3rd greatest IndyCar driver we've ever seen. Yeah. And the top 2, that's a pretty good company if you're between Mario Andretti and AJ Foyt.
Arguably the 2 greatest racing drivers in North American motorsport history.
I do need to point out that graphic that was shown on the broadcast is compared to Pelot specifically to the top 5 most successful drivers. Yes, Sebastian Bourdais had an all-time heater of a first 63 races. He did not finish top 5 in career wins.
Yeah.
Which just goes to show you how, God... the years after Toro Rosso,
not been kind.
Yeah, and this is a series that, as opposed to, you know, open class series where the objective is to build the best car and then install the best drivers into it, this series is largely spec.
That's right.
These stats, these numbers, this season... There?
Yes.
A little bit, but you're fine. But like, I think you're fine. Like I said, overall, these numbers, these stats, everything that has come together this season is absolutely outrageous from Alex Pelot. They are unfathomably great. This is the greatest single IndyCar season I've ever seen in the last 8 years I've been a fan. And I've watched some quality seasons. Like, I watched Dixon in 2018 completely rip this field open. It was not like this.
Keep in mind as well, right? That 618 is with a regular points Indy 500.
Single point 500.
A regular race points Indy 500 that pull up. After he that was the race, so he was dead to rights because he got cleared out in the pit lane.
Yeah, it was beating the brakes off the field and got speared by Rinus VK.
If he had the extra awards, I think it's 32 points for finishing 4th. And on top of that, if it was a double point 500, he'd be in range of Dixon's all-time scoring record from 2018. I think he had 670 something, which was just... Which is... This is otherworldly. I said this on Twitter, and I will say it again here. Max Verstappen is putting together an all-time ridiculous Formula One season. He will do well not for him to have the greatest statistical F1 season we've seen since Jim Clark went perfect, right? I am not fully convinced Max Verstappen is driver of the year, and that's only because Alex Pelot has been that good.
An IndyCar is a series that is designed inherently to prevent this from happening. The chassis are spec. The tires are single supplier. The only things that are really open are suspension choices on aero, because you have some sets of parts that you can pick, and picking between Honda and Chevrolet for engines. This shouldn't be possible.
Yeah.
None of this should be possible.
It's only possible when you have a driver operating that far ahead of everyone else. And this year... His worst race was 8th.
two eighth places, twice. One seventh. I think everything else is in the top five. Five wins, nine podium finishes. And Scott Dixon, like I said, arguably the greatest North American racing driver of the modern age, is nearly 100 points behind him. And Dixon has had a fantastic season, by all accounts. He's been incredible. There you go. Jason Capitales, he's finished outside of the top five four times this year in 16 races. What is this man? Like, honestly, it is completely ridiculous. We've gushed for the last 15 minutes about this, and I still feel like we're not doing him justice. Well, and I've got on top of this as well. Disgustingly nice man.
One of the nicest dudes in the paddock, by all accounts. Always worth a laugh.
I've spoken to Jack Benyon about this. He's my colleague at the race who covers IndyCar. Gushes about what a genuinely lovely man he is. He will give you time. He will ask how you're doing. He will always give you as much as he possibly can in terms of candidness, in honestness. We've had the fortune of having him on the WTF One podcast earlier this year with Harry Benjamin and Callan O'Keefe. I was in complete shock when I found out they had Pillow on the show, because he didn't tell me as I was editing the show that they had Pillow on it. And he was, again, a delight on that show as well. He was as candid and as honest as you can be. He is a disgustingly nice man. He's almost too nice for his own good. He's a fantastic ambassador for the series. It says a lot about the state of Pillow as a human, where the number 10 crew gushes over this man. And when he won the title, one of the first dudes to come over and congratulate him was Marcus Ericsson, who is leaving this team at the end of the season, and gave him an enormous hug.
Yeah. And think of the difference in scenes from a year ago, when he was effectively frozen out of that team due to the still ongoing contract drama.
Dario Franchitti has his heir.
Yeah, the ten.
That is terrifying.
Dario was there.
Dario
Franchitti was there to watch this coronation. And talking about the contrast in scenes from a year ago, when we thought, is Chip going to pull Alex out of the car this week or next week? Chip Ganassi is in victory lane. Kevin Lee asked him, so is Alex going to be in your car this year? Chip says, Alex Pillow is going to be in our car. I can tell you that much for sure.
Oh, yeah. Chip likes winners. And, Alex Pillow has been terminally winning this year.
Allegedly, a three-year deal, apparently, has been extended to Alex Pillow, wow, from what I've been told.
He's your guy. Oh, and by the way, Chip Ganassi also just got Linus Lundqvist for the 8 car.
What the hell were you doing, IndyCar?
So they have their guy who is in his prime, beating everyone's ass. They have the wily old fox of Scott Dixon, who's going to stay there for as long as he wants because, well, Scott Dixon and Chip Ganassi. Mm-hmm. A combination as old as time and as successful as ever. And, you can mold into whatever you want him to be.
A reminder that Scott Dixon still beat the hell out of everybody in IndyCar this year not named Alex Pillow.
Yeah. He exists in this chasm where he's way behind Pillow on points, but he's way ahead of everyone else because Newgarden had another pretty mediocre showing.
He had he's 56 points ahead of Joseph Newgarden in third. Dixon's in the land of his own.
Yeah.
I talked about it during the race. Like, Joseph Newgarden, who won four races this year, has quietly put together one of the greatest mediocre seasons.
He won almost every oval race on the year, won four times, and has led almost twice as many laps as anybody else this year. He finished third.
You know what I've said about Carlos Sainz, where he's had the most C+, A- season I've ever seen? That's Joseph Newgarden this year.
Absolutely bonkers.
RJ.
Yeah,
we picked a good one. I think we picked a good one. You don't win.
That boy special.
We gushed after this guy's first Super Formula win, which, oh by the way, was in some of the worst rain conditions I have ever seen, where a race wasn't red flagged.
Yeah.
Grand slammed that race.
Mm-hmm. By the way, he grand slammed that race, and the Nakajima Racing team that he drove for hadn't won a race in 9 years.
Yeah. You don't pull that off. without being very, very special.
He had a chance to be the series champion going into the final round of that year, and if the race hadn't turned out so poorly, who knows?
Up against, Jesus Christ. Look, there's some really goddamn great drivers in Super Formula. Hashtag
Naoki Yamamoto. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Nick Cassidy ended up being champion that year, and he's going to be, he's been great for Envision in Formula E, and he's going to be just as great for Jaguar. Dre, I know you were very, very happy that Nick Cassidy is here and not somebody else alongside your mans. Anyway, no, I'm on a tangent.
Nick Cassidy is a fantastic racing driver. Like, he's been like, brilliant in Formula E for the last couple of years.
You don't do what he's been doing without being really goddamn special.
The naughtiest thing that Alex Palou did was blocking Elio Castroneves on cold tires coming out of the pits. And, like, race control should have looked at that. At most, that's a drop one position penalty. Other than that, Palou had a perfect race.
Yeah, yeah, probably the closest thing to a perfect season you're going to see out of modern IndyCar.
In a unified era with more full-time teams than anybody else, and the only things you can change with a car are select aero bits at select tracks and the dampers.
And he just ran this field over on a scale we literally have not seen on one side of the split since 05, on the other side of the split since 07. The unified IndyCar series does not know a beating of this magnitude.
I was even going back through Racing Reference for stats to find like the last highest finish before 1996. It was Rick Mears in 1981.
Oh, Rick Mears, that guy.
Fuck off.
Pretty good driver. He was all right.
One of the greatest ever. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the only blot on this season wasn't even his fault, and it was taking a dominant 500 and taking Arenas VK to the side pod. Oh, and he recovered and finished fourth in that race.
Fourth.
Man, dude,
what can we say that hasn't already been said? I like to look very smug right now because I picked this.
You did that man is special.
I did not have the courage to do so because look, I didn't know what was going to come out of this year. Like, we were all going on this thinking, yeah, this is a lame duck year because Palou's on his way to McLaren. Now, we didn't know, we didn't have the foresight at the time to predict what was going to happen in the lead up to the Brickyard Grand Prix in August.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's going to cause some headaches later on down the road because McLaren is still trying to get eight figures out of Palou and his new management.
I remember, like, a month into the season when Romain Grosjean was looking like championship favorite.
Is that a good way to segue?
A good way to segue because it doesn't feel good.
Because Andretti Global announced heading into the weekend, and Romain Grosjean announced that he will not be returning to Andretti Autosport next season. Frenchman has already committed to some role in Lamborghini's new LMDH program, and he does still have offers on the table, including one to reunite with the team that brought him into the sport, Dale Coyne Racing. Should he still be in the series, and what have you made of his time as Yale? I think I can answer the first question. Like, I've been harsh on Romain Grosjean at times, especially after the spring, but yes, he should still be in the series. If you're a team like Dale Coyne Racing, you are not serious if you were expecting Stingray Rob or Devlin DeFrancesco to be your number one option.
Yeah, other than the fact that apparently Stingray Rob's going to Andretti. What in the hell? Is Michael smoking?
Dude.
Money.
Lots of money. Supposedly 9 million clams.
Dude, what? That's...
Yeah. Now, apparently,
does Andretti Global need to make a trade for cash considerations?
Unironically, and this is from discussions from Marshall Pruitt's kind of YouTube. Is it a podcast? It feels like a podcast.
Like a podcast.
In this case, more of a vlog.
Friend of the Indianapolis Star, Marshall Pruitt, by the way.
Originally the figure was around $4.5 million. It is now doubled to try and get into the 29.
Where the hell is he getting that money from?
All we know is that Devlin doesn't have it anymore.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, look, For those who don't know, I did a race review of this race, of course. You probably knew that if you listened to me already. I went into a deep dive on this. I crunched the numbers on this season. And look, I came to one conclusion here. If Grosjean's been cut from Andretti, it's not for performance reasons. Like, I looked at the numbers across the board. The first thing I noticed, one, Andretti this year has been a bit worse than I actually thought they've been.
Dude, they have. Kyle Kirkwood has been the only driver that's performed at or above expectations. Well, and
because, Dre, it's always
not,
looked...
It's not...
It's looked good in terms of pace.
Sure.
And then it just falls apart.
It doesn't transfer to the stat sheet. It's like I looked at Grosjean's, like I looked at the key stats of Grosjean last season. Last season, he was 13th in the championship. He had 321 points. He had a podium finish. 3 top 5, 7 top 10s, across the 17 races. Through 15 rounds this year, so this is before Portland, he was 12th overall, 271 points, 2 podiums, 2 top 5s, 3 top 10s in 15 races. And this is a guy that was bitterly unlucky at the start of this year. He was robbed of at least 40 points in St. Petersburg, like given the McLaughlin incident. You give him the 40, no, not the 50 out of that race, and I'm being harsh when I only say 40, he's about even, is what
I
would
say. Think
about
Texas. Think about Texas as well.
Texas was, again, very, very marginal incident with David Malukas on that one. Didn't, like, the punishment did not fit the crime, in my opinion. Like, Barber, again, bitterly unlucky in that one as well.
Push the pass failure.
Like, you give him another 50 points, he's broken even from last year. And no one was complaining about Romain Grosjean overall last year.
Well, I think Alex Rossi was.
Well, Alex Rossi complains about everybody.
Roman Grosjean himself even said, look, I can be kind of an ass as a teammate, and that's something that he worked on. But apparently it's just like when Roman Grosjean has a bad day, and he had bad days when he was at Haas, like he could be miserable for all the other people working around him. And we saw that blow up at the Indy Grand Prix in May. We saw it again in Portland. Michael Andretti said, you know, hey, something to the effect of like, you know, when he has these bad days, he can be tough to work with.
I mean, you can be a dick if you're winning. Winning cures a lot of ills in this sport. If you're not winning and you're blowing up at your crew like that, and as much as I am a historic Romain Grosjean fan, I'm still mad about Japan 2013. You see, too much of it this year has been on him to be able to you know, berate your team like that. You have to be able to take accountability.
And the evidence of what I've read from people like Marshall Pruitt and others across the board this year in IndyCar has been that Grosjean has had an unfortunate tendency to lash out at his team on numerous occasions, including this past weekend in Portland, where in qualifying, we saw him on the hard camera visibly going at it with his crew chief.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like Paul Tracy almost got fired from his team because of that in 98. But though, to be fair, Paul Tracy almost wrecked his team, also wrecked his teammate at Houston one time. And Barry Green, his boss, told him, you deserve that, Paul. Dude,
I think
it's crazy because, like, Romain Grosjean, outside of the working environment, when he's not, like, having a bad day like that, one of the nicest people in the sport.
And one of the most popular people in the sport as a result.
People love him, and rightly so. He's a good person with a good heart, and I know that... He means well in how he gets down, but he's got a short fuse. There is no getting around that. We've seen multiple times on hard cameras, the evidence is overwhelming that he has a short fuse and he takes it out on his team. And you cannot do that in public in motorsport. People will eviscerate you for it. And
he celebrates the success and it blows up about the defeats just as passionately. And
that's a problem.
And lately he's had a whole lot less success to talk about because the second half of this year has been really poor, but not just for him, for all of Andretti. Difference is, the guys like Kirkwood and Herta are putting their heads down and trying to get on with it.
Grosjean's right. average finish since the month of May has been 15.
And that is that does not reflect the pace that he and the rest of that team has shown, but that's the Andretti way lately.
With four retirements, not all of them have been his fault, but none of them has been his fault. I want the coin thing to go through, and I hope that it rekindles like some of the form that he had in 2021, where he was should have been rookie of the year if not for the fact that he didn't run every race. Right. I know, like, he's coming up to 40 years old. Like, Romain Grosjean in IndyCar was always going to be, it was never going to be a 20-year thing. There's not enough time for that. But the time at Andretti Autosport should never have gone as bad as it did. I'd say, like, it's been a disappointment. But then again, Jack Harvey and Simon Pagenaud going to new employers was supposed to work great for everybody involved, and none of it did, and that's before accounting for Pagenaud's injury. Don't get it.
You know, I'm really sad.
I know.
Me too. Like,
because it wasn't supposed to go this way. The Indy 500 death lineup. I mean, it's been successful in sports cars, although under dubious circumstances, given the recent happenings with Meyer Shank. I really hope this isn't the end of Simon Pagenaud.
I really hope so too, because Simon Pagenaud can still offer something. Like, I know he turns 40 years and next year, and this is all contingent on if he is ever cleared to race again at this high level. He can still offer a team in the IndyCar series something, and I know for damn sure he could still offer a team at the highest level of prototype racing something for many, many years to come. But I'll just have to wait and see if he could race.
If this is the end, first of all, I hope his quality of life is such that he can be okay. And I feel like I picked a good one.
Yeah, you picked a great one. He's one of the best drivers of this era. He is won everything you can win in this sport. Let's not forget his incredibly dominant 2016 Astor Cup campaign of his own, where he laid waste to this field. I think he won 7 races that season. Yeah. He was so
the
good.
Most dominant Indy 500 performance of the modern age in 2019.
Yeah. Swept the month of May and ripped it out of Alexander Rossi's hands at the time when Alexander Rossi was the guy pound for pound at Indianapolis.
Yeah, he was the best 500 driver in the field year on year. A constant, perennial, angry threat to win the 500.
The only bright spot of Penske's 2021 Indy 500 run.
Oh, yeah. Podium finish there, too. And just on top of that, a live wire that didn't take himself too seriously in this series, wasn't always prepared to have a smile and a laugh, did a lot to promote the series and his time at the top. And was never afraid to be himself or speak his mind in a series that lets you speak your mind. And that's what made him such an incredibly charming and likable person.
When I got to see him in 2016, actually before the start of his absurd run, when they were promoting that Boston IndyCar race, that turned into a whole bag of dicks. That turned into a big bag of dicks. And I knew him from sports cars, and my dad can attest to the fact. I went up to talk to him. No one was around him. And I tell him I'm a big fan because I was a fan of him in sports cars. And he goes, "You know me?"
That's great.
And we talked about sports. And I talked to him for like 15 minutes, not only about IndyCar, but sports cars too. Even when I went to Petit Le Mans with RJ and a whole bunch of the crew in 2019.
Yeah, Simon was there.
Simon was there, had a minute to chat while he was walking to the car for qualifying. Always made it a point to take a moment for a fan because in his own words, that's what he wanted when he would try to talk to a racing driver when he was a little kid. So,
it's
beautiful.
Yeah. If this is the end of Simon Pagenaud, I am glad I got to pick him as a racing driver as a fan.
You did good.
Without
you did
doubt.
Good. a great driver, a great person, and we hope it's not the end. And of course, continued best wishes towards Simon, Haley, and of course the whole family. Hopefully, it's not the end of the story for Simon Pagenaud, one way or the other. Now, let's talk about something quite interesting there. Like, this is something that not a lot of people I notice in IndyCar talk about very often.
Well, because I tried to talk about this a couple years ago, and then it seemed like the rules of this changed like every other week. Like, there was a part-time car that was in the top 22 in the owner's points, but it doesn't count for leader circle points, even though it does. Oh, man. So, yeah. The leader circles is... Top 22 in owners points, top 22 full-time teams that run every single race get a $1 million prize bonus. It's basically like the Premier League's relegation battle. Only this one doesn't involve Everton, doesn't involve Luton Town.
Well, it's a lot like when we had 12 teams, or more than 10, I should say, in Formula One, where the top 10 get the money. The other two at the bottom, sucks to be them.
All right, so I've got we got an up to date standings here. So
we do. I'm going to go on Wikipedia as well.
Yeah. So thank you for that. Only nerds appreciate that, by the way.
Thanks, Toto.
Of course. Here's who I know was definitely safe. So 19th through 27th, I could say that the number 14 AJ Foyt car, driven by Santucci Farino, is safe. I can also say the same of Elio Castroneves' number 06 car, the car that's going to be driven by Tom Blomqvist next year. I can tell you in all confidence that the number 51 Dale Coyne Rick Ware car currently being driven by Stinger is confidently not going to crack the top 22.
No.
And the same for the number 55 car of AJ Foyt Enterprises, which by some miracle, might still be driven by Benjamin Peterson, who has a multi-year deal and quite a bit of backing behind him. And plus, like, I guess he could always take a chance on the fastest rookie to ever qualify for the Indianapolis 500, who also got parked for an oval race for being too slow. I don't get it. But here are the teams. But I want to get to the point, like, there are five teams within 15 points of one another, and only the top two are going to finish in the top in those two spots to lock down that $1 million bonus.
I was going to say, and I'll get to this after RJ explains, but there is genuine big ramifications regarding where these five cars finish up.
So in the number 20 car at Carpenter Racing, 179 points. They are 7 points above the cut line. That is the car being driven by Ryan Hunter-Reay. 22nd, holding on to that spot is the number 30 Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan Racing car, being driven by
Yuri Vips.
We got time for that. We got time to talk about that after this.
I honestly prefer we just leave it. Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
I'll keep it brief. If you are white and you are commenting on this, you do not have the authority to tell people of color whether or not I should forgive someone like Yuri Vips for dropping an M-bomb on a stream and whether he should be given a second chance. People of color do not normally have the luxury to be able to make those kind of decisions.
I'm not going to tell you to forgive him. Fuck that guy.
I could also say this. Yes, he was the top rookie in 18th in this race, but that's also because Marcus Armstrong and Agustin Canapino
had such a good race going and had a disastrous stop.
Seventh, he was running seventh at the time.
Ugh, okay.
God damn it.
All right. Anyway,
big board. 20 car, 7 points above the cut line. 30 car on the cut line. 29 car. This is the Devlin DeFrancesco car, 3 points behind 22nd. The 60 car that is going to be driven by Tom Blomqvist in the finale at Laguna Seca is 6 points behind the cut line. And the number 78 Yukos Hollinger car of Agustin Canapino is 8 points behind the cut line.
There is big ramifications on this, not just in terms of the extra $1 million of funding if your car cracks the top 22. We've got it on good authority. Andretti will downsize to 3 cars, potentially, if Devlin's 29 doesn't make it.
Yeah, basically, it's a question of whether they can that car entirely or if Stingray Rob's big bag of bucks sustains that car into next year.
But why? Like, Stingray rob his cheeks.
$9 million.
Jesus.
That's enough
Christ.
To subsidize that seat and then some. They might actually make money, no matter how ass he is, with that
Dude,
kind of funding.
That's crazy. That's like you know, the Oakland Athletics being profitable while they just completely flagrantly tell their fans to go fuck themselves.
Yeah. If Stingray Rob doesn't end up in that seat, Andretti have already said they are likely to get rid of the 29 car entirely.
I'm going to talk about the 78 car.
Yeah, because we have it on again. That, like, Ricardo Junkos kind of spoke about this on the record after Portland finished on social media. He claims that there is an agreement to keep Canapino for next year. Allegedly, behind the scenes, he's telling people that Canapino likely will not be back if he doesn't make it.
And it's a shame because Canapino has done, generally speaking, nothing really wrong this whole season. He's been great for the sport.
He's been quick, but at the same time, he has been a bit erratic. I'd say more in the second half than the first half, which is surprising to me given the way
his results have dropped off a cliff. Yeah. The last five races, 26th, 20th, 21st, 22nd, 26th.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
First half, he was doing solid. And
yeah, he's also got three 12th places this year, which is not bad at all for a rookie.
Yeah, it's just the trend needs to go back in the other direction.
Yeah, his end of year form has dropped off a cliff, which is a bit of a problem. And that's been unfortunate. And like, allegedly, Junkos has said on the record he will run two cars no matter what next year. The question is Canapino going to be in that chair if he does?
There's another question, like, is Callum Ilott going to be a Junkos Hollinger racing car or a Arrow McLaren with Junkos Hollinger racing car?
I love that Junkos also said in that video that a lot of these talks happen about McLaren and other places, but they don't actually go anywhere, which I think is a really polite way of saying that Zak Brown is often full of shit. Or at least I'd like to think that in my head.
I think that's legit. Personally. I think that's correct to think.
Also, just think of the irony it would be to see McLaren and Junkos Racing join forces.
Christ almighty. like
that only just dawned on me. Oh my God.
God.
Fernando Alonso and Kyle Kaiser from completely opposite ends of the world just completely spit out their drinks.
Yeah, it's wild
dead.
On that one.
I got better.
Yeah, that's another one to come into play. I'm pretty adamant that Rahal Letterman Lanigan Racing cut Jack Harvey two rounds out because of this entrant point situation and rolled the dice on Vips.
Yeah, it is.
Which is crazy because, like, you're throwing him in. Yes, he's been testing for them since October. Hashtag. It's like my friend. It's like Holly Anderson of the Shutdown Fullcast frequently says they wanted to, so they did. But, like, even he was struggling to acclimate. You're throwing a rookie into this spot?
Because Jack Harvey was ultra cheeks.
Yeah, he was awful.
Connor Daly could have gotten you these points.
Could this year? I don't know about that. Connor Daly was also cheeks.
Connor Daly was also cheeks, and he's the reason why the 20 is in such a deep hole in the first place.
There was a couple.
Hunter Ray has not been anything special. But
been more special
we kind of knew
that
going
been
in.
More special than the last guy in the seat.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah,
and
I don't know. So who gets it? Who gets these last two spots? Because I think for me, Ryan Hunter-Reay is going to just enough at Laguna Seca.
I agree.
On, and I think Tom Blomqvist is going to jump two spots because, like, he needs a good result to really kickstart his 2024 campaign.
Yeah, and he was in the time we saw, he was quick, if nothing else. We know Tom Blomqvist is fast.
I'm looking at the scoreboard. It's a lot of work for Tom to get up two spots.
He needs six points,
which at that back end of the table might be five or six positions.
Yeah. It's the difference between
difference
between like 17th and 24th.
I like right now, I can't believe I'm saying this. I think Devlin's in the best shape.
Wow.
That has never been said on this podcast and never will be said again.
Devlin is 3 points below the line and he's got Vips directly in front of him. I can't believe I'm saying this, but in that scenario, I would probably take DeFrancesco over Vips given the current climate.
To save that car at Andretti Steinbrenner Racing and to keep Stingray Rob gainfully employed.
Yeah.
Woof.
I think Devlin gets there. I really do. I'm not convinced on Vips. I think that was a desperation Hail Mary throw from Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan Racing to put him in there over Harvey in the first place. I think Canapino is too far back. The only blessing for him is that Junkos went really well at Laguna Seca last year with Canamilot. Maybe setup wise they might have something that might get Canapino in the top 15. If he does, maybe he pulls off a miracle here.
It's gonna take a miracle.
It's going to take a top 10 finish from one of those dudes to really shake it. Because the way the scoring works, you don't start jumping up on 2 points per spot until you get to the top 10. It's a point per position from 11th place downwards.
And all those cars, only one of them has a top 10 finish all season. That was Connor Daly in the 20 car at the Indianapolis 508.
Yeah. So you're talking, if you're 8 points back, you're likely looking at 8 positions. That's hard to pull off at the back end of the field like that. Oof. I think the best shot you have is Devlin leaps over Vips into 22nd. That's my shout. And look, here's what I'll say on top of all this. They need to expand the leader circle beyond 22. You cannot champion expansion in this series and talk about, you know, oh, we got 27 full-time cars, but then you're only paying 22 of them to be there.
It's the same. It's you're the asking, same as Formula One a few years ago. We had more than 10
teams. You're asking
teams
to retract. You're asking teams to sacrifice and make bad decisions and retract. You can't be sitting and saying, yeah, let's get more cars on this grid and then not pay them for being there. Open your wallets or don't bother.
That's why I said that about IndyCar this year.
Many.
Spend some damn money.
I love me some IndyCar. But like the fact that 5 cars are not going to get paid to be there, and $1 million is a significant amount of money. For like that's 20% of a team's budget, roughly, for the year.
That's like two Las Vegas Grand Prix tickets standing room only.
Why do you think the teams in the current climate of Formula One are pretty much all banding together to try and stop another entity, Andretti, joining?
Global.
Because if Andretti Global gets in, someone has to finish 11th in the constructors, and someone ain't getting paid.
To that I say, Formula One, you're making more and more money. You need to open up that prize pool. You can do it.
Say the same here. We know Penske ain't broke. Roger Penske has stacks. There's no good reason why this isn't opened up, and gestures wildly, all of the other things that we've said this year regarding IndyCar not wanting to invest in themselves just comes right back to the fore. If you want more cars, it's too much of a risk.
We shouldn't be talking, like, don't get me wrong, we're all a little bit guilty of patting IndyCar on the back when cool things happen. Like, it's cool that there's 27 full-time cars on this grid. There is no point in celebrating that if you are risking 2 or 3 of them getting blown up every year when they can't make the leader circle.
Yeah, and not only that, we're having the discussion of, like, leader circle expanding to basically just be the equivalent of NASCAR charters. So,
right.
Yeah, in that sense, if you're pushing for that, you should be pushing for more leader circle teams. That's what you should be pushing for.
Yeah, you want a more stable sport, right? And you get more stability by having more guaranteed teams and guaranteed cars.
You want a sport that's so stable that you're threatening the one big draw of the difficulty of qualifying for the Indianapolis 500, allegedly, try and make that happen.
So open your wallets up, IndyCar. I know you can do it, Roger. You've more than got the money and the capability and the resources to do
so. If it was about paying cars to show up for the Indy 500, it wouldn't even be a question.
Right. Yeah, and yeah, the funding that barely got to 33 last year. You know, if we got there a bit more comfortably this year. We had to bump one dude, but like it was, yeah, it's not ideal. Like, I'm not even saying 27. Can we get it to 25? 25. Give me 25.
25 in the leader circle. Just, I don't want 25-8 at the 500 again.
Right.
I think we should have learned that lesson 30 years ago.
Oh, agreed. Agreed. The IndyCar season finale. It's a bit of an exhibition race on this occasion. I guess there's a fun fight for third in the championship between New Guard and O'Ward, and McGuckin can keep half an eye on if you're that way inclined. The Given a Sake is always a fun track. It produces fun races. We'll see how that goes down. Championship decider, the final race of the season this weekend at Monterey Laguna Seca. Hope you're there for that. Don't worry, we'll also do an IndyCar season review in a couple of weeks' time as well. They're always fun to break down and have a look at. But I think there's a lot of interesting stories beneath the obvious surface this year. It's been a fascinating season, generally. Even if you want to say one more time, Alex Palou, just an unbelievable, incredible season from the Spaniard. All hail the fried chicken master himself. And we will see how the rest of the field shakes out. But an incredible display from Alex Palou all year long, and a very, very worthy two-time Aster Cup winner and IndyCar Series champion. I've been Dre Harrison. They've been Cam Buckley and RJ O'Connell. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next week. Sayonara.
Adios.
I think Ryanair King just woke up in a cold sweat.